Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Great classic comes to the screen.
Stay thy hand, fair prince.
Who said I'm fair? To be or not to be? Not to be.
Columbia Pictures is proud to present the screen's greatest action hero, Jack Slater.
Welcome to Rewatchability. It's the podcast where we rewatch old movies and see how they hold up. Today, I'm Robert LaRonde. With me, as always, is
Blaine Waters
and
J.M. McNabb.
And today, we have a really huge movie to talk about. It is one of the biggest movies of all time, I think. It seems like it with the cast, anyway. It should have been one of the greatest movies of all time.
It's one of the most muscular movies of all time.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Taught. But before we get into that, first of all, we want to thank our Patreons. Those are the people who give us a little bit of money each month, and that helps us keep going. That is the magic ticket to our world.
It sounds like we're doing Willy Wonka or something.
No, that's a golden ticket.
So was this.
Yeah, this was also gold.
Oh, shit. Yeah, but the Wonka ticket wasn't magic.
Wasn't it?
Oh, shit.
It transported me.
Transported us all. So you can go to patreon.com/rewatchability, and that's where you donate a little bit of money and you get the perks, like you get the podcast early, it's ad-free, it's better quality, and sometimes there's some bonus content. Mm-hmm. So those are all good reasons to do that. If you're a real fan, care about podcasts.
Fanboy, podcast fanboys.
Now we're going to talk about The Last Action Hero, the 1993 movie starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, directed by John McTiernan. But before we get into that, first of all, we want to talk about some changes.
Rob just hit puberty.
That's
and
right.
It's been a real...
There is some crazy stuff happening down there and up here in my mind.
Okay. Oh, God.
No, we want to tell you that we are going to be switching up the format a little bit of Rewatchability because we've been doing this podcast every week, a new movie, 54 weeks a year.
54.
For a million years, and we're going to try something new, and I think it'll help us make the podcast better. Mm-hmm. It'll give us more time to research and make sure that we're giving you, like, the quality that we want to give you each week. So we will tell you what the movie is that we'll be watching on the regular episode on a sort of mini episode that'll come the week before. So you'll still get a rewatchability every week. One week it'll be the mini episode where we talk about the first time that we saw the movie and what it means to us and all that stuff. And then the second episode where we really get into it and talk about whether it's rewatchable.
Yeah, and that'll give listeners the chance to, if they'd like to, watch the movie with us and have a bit more context for the deep dive that we do the following week.
Exactly. So we're going to start that next week.
So this is our last, like, regular episode.
Yeah.
Whoa. Oh, my God.
You may say it's the last action podcast. You wouldn't say
no,
that.
No, no one would say that.
Yeah, it was a big stretch.
I mean, you would have had to start drinking at like 10 o'clock in the morning.
Well, I did, so.
Oh, okay.
So next week, look forward to that. And you know, it's still going to be the same great show. It'll just be broken in half.
Yeah. And we want to encourage more listener feedback and engagement. So you can always email us, tweet us, you know, send us stuff about your attachments to these movies and your reactions to rewatching them. And we can read them out on the mini episodes.
Yeah. Exactly.
And what you think we should know if we like skip something or you want everyone to know a certain behind the scenes thing that happened in the movie. You can email us that too.
Yeah. Or one of the many, many errors we make. Correct.
Yeah, you can totally fact check us.
Yes, yes. But today's movie, we're still going to make those errors.
Oh, yeah.
So, Blaine, when was the first time that you saw The Last Action Hero? Is it The Last Action Hero or just Last Action Hero?
I think it's The Last Action Hero, isn't it?
Last Action Hero.
One of the last action heroes.
I mean, I know what the font looks like.
Yeah, for sure. I loved action movies so much. Like, Die Hard was one of the first movies I saw. My mom watched it with me, and it was like a family thing.
Bonding with
us. Yeah, with me and my mom. So it was really nice to watch that with her and to watch a lot of action movies. I got really into them. And so when this movie came out,
Mom date.
I took my mom for Mother's Day. It was a beautiful thing. No, I wanted to see it very badly, and I remember absolutely loving it. I knew who was involved. Like, I knew it was the director of Die Hard and the writer from Lethal Weapon, which is like, what a team that is.
Yeah, dream team. Yeah,
exactly. Hopefully they won't, like, negate each other somehow in a terrible mess.
But if they do that, then Arnold Schwarzenegger will pull it out because he's amazing, right?
Yes, right?
Like, he won't just be sucked down into that quagmire. But I really liked it. There were so many puns. I liked the Hamlet stuff that was in it. I thought it was all very, very funny and very, like, you know, avant-garde with the, like, movie within the movie.
Ooh, avant-garde.
Well, I didn't know what avant-garde was back then.
Last Action Hero.
Yeah, so I thought it was pretty high quality stuff back in the day.
So you liked it?
I loved it.
Okay.
Yeah. And I have seen it a few times since.
Okay.
Wow. And yeah, and I liked it each time I saw it. But we'll talk about this recent viewing later on in the episode. What about you, JM? When did you first see it?
Well, first of all, I do want to say I looked it up. It is just Last Action Hero.
Okay. Okay.
And that's because they had a meeting with Sean Parker before they released it. And he said, you know what? Take it off. I didn't like this movie.
When you first saw it?
No, I didn't see it in theaters. Mm. I think I saw it when it first came out on video.
Okay.
I don't think I was yet a Schwarzenegger fan.
Whoa. Right.
Like, we'll get into how this is kind of a weird... This movie nestles in a weird demographic where it's kind of a kid's movie, but it's kind of making fun of R-rated movies.
Right.
And, like, I think it was probably, like, the year after this or a year or two after when I really got into Die Hard and Terminator.
Right.
And the movies that I really liked when I was 11 or 12. Yeah, this one I had less of a vested interest. I think the only reason I saw it was because it was heavily marketed towards kids.
Oh, God, yeah.
Which we'll also talk
about.
But I do remember being disappointed, and it's long.
It's 2 hours. It's over 2 hours.
So, yeah, I was not a fan, but I also have always wanted to rewatch it just because there's so much of this movie that I feel like I should love.
Right.
So I was optimistic going into it now, even though I didn't like it at first, because I may not have had the right sort of background viewings necessary
like
to enjoy it.
You got into action movies after this movie.
Yeah, I'd seen Lethal Weapon. I don't know. But we'll get into it. But yeah, I wasn't a big fan. What about you, Rob?
Well, I did have a vested interest. I had definitely seen my fair share of Arnold Schwarzenegger movies by the time that this came out. I know that I saw Running Man and Predator when I was really young. And I'd seen Terminator 2 as well. So by the time this hit, I was already a pretty big Arnold Schwarzenegger fan, and he was really the first big movie star for me. Like, he just seemed like a movie star. He was superhuman. He had all these muscles. He didn't seem like somebody who could exist in the real world. Mm-hmm. Like, you would need a golden ticket or a magic ticket or whatever the fuck. So I was excited. I was excited to see this movie. I remember we rented it, and we sat down to watch it, and I don't know. I just – it didn't come together, you know? Like, it did have all the elements that I was supposed to like. Like, it had Arnold Schwarzenegger. It had lots of action. Mm. It had, like, a really cool villain. And also, I was supposed to like these movies where kids do things. Like, you know, like the Cop right. and a Half, for example.
Sure.
You know,
yeah.
anything where there's a kid and, like, an adult who doesn't really like kids, that is prime material for somebody of that age. I think I was like, you know, 9 or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Any movie
sure.
that encourages kids to hang out with adults who do not like children is a good idea.
We were taught the wrong things for movies.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. So I was disappointed, and I hadn't watched it since. I do remember it coming up a lot in grad school while I was studying Shakespeare.
Wait, what?
Yeah. Yeah, because I was really interested in contemporary adaptations of Shakespeare, things that take avant-garde approaches, and this movie was frequently cited as something that takes an avant-garde approach to the Shakespeare play Hamlet, but
vindicated.
Without taking away its meaning, because it still has the whole, like, will Hamlet take action sort of thing in its scene. So I hadn't seen it since then. I didn't watch it, though. I'm pretty sure I cited it in a paper back in grad school. So I was really excited to watch it again and see whether or not it was something. And I should also say that even though it was a huge flop when it first came out, it is sort of regarded as a cult film. So I thought it was ripe for a second chance.
I think a lot of people our age do have a kind of love for it or a nostalgia for it.
Yeah, and people have told me that this is a movie that we should cover on the podcast several times.
Yeah, I feel like it was marketed towards kids because kids had more imagination than maybe this movie did. Like, when I look back on this movie, it's so much better in my imagination than when I watched it this time. But we'll get into that. Rob, do you want to run down the movie for us?
I do. So it starts with cops surrounding a building. It's a very Die Hard-like scenario. It's even Christmas.
Shane Black.
There you go.
That's right. And we see a pair of snakeskin cowboy boots stopping over the cop cars. And, of course, this is Arnold Schwarzenegger, and he's coming to save the day or whatever. He walks right past Tina Turner, who is the mayor,
right.
for some reason. I think she would have been a great politician. Mm-hmm. And she still could be.
Why was there no We Don't Need Another Last Action Hero song on the soundtrack?
Oh, yeah. Damn.
He also passes like that lieutenant governor guy too, right? He's like, call me when the governor gets here.
Right.
And he is the governor.
Or he was the governor.
Exactly.
At one point.
He got there.
But that was after this. Maybe this is where he got the idea.
Yeah, he's like, governor. Yeah, that's a good word.
There are a lot of notable like moments where politics are sort of like dismissed or, you know, he's like, politicians are bad.
Mm-hmm.
And it does seem like maybe the seeds for Arnie's political awakening.
Right. This is the movie that started it all.
We have to stop magic tickets. But it's just a movie that some kid is watching in a movie theater. It's a Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. He plays a guy named Jack Slater. And it's like a typical sort of action movie. Tom Noonan is there. Yeah. And this kid,
you know, noted action star Tom Noonan.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he was in a few things early on in his career, but it's definitely weird to see him as like a bad guy in this film.
It's a movie that like peels back multiple layers of reality starring Tom Noonan. Are we sure this isn't a Charlie Kaufman movie?
Yeah, I was just about to say. Yeah.
See, I thought that Tom Noonan's character was Arnold Schwarzenegger's character, like a doppelganger who doesn't look really like him at all.
Oh.
I don't know. But this kid escapes into the movies. He spends all of his time down at the local movie house. He's friends with the projectionist, Nick, and that is where he goes to escape his crappy life because he's just not a happy kid. His dad is dead, and his mom is Mercedes Rule, who rules.
I love her.
But
so good.
It would probably be hard having her as a mom because, she's a tough lady. Wasn't she also the mom in Big?
No.
Okay. Well, she was in Big, though, right?
Was she?
I don't know. Anyway.
She's in The Fisher King.
Yeah,
she definitely was in The Fisher King.
She was in a season of Frasier.
You know Frasier so well. You love that show.
Yeah.
But this kid, he's friends with this projectionist, and the projectionist promises him that he will screen for him the pre-release of the new Jack Slater movie, mm-hmm. which is not even out yet.
This right. movie opens with a borderline homeless man inviting a child to come back to his empty theater at midnight. there are a lot of red flags.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also, can we talk about this theater for a second? Because it's like, I don't know. It's like this beautiful old kind of right. movie palace.
Yeah.
But then it's almost like a Terry Gilliam movie or something where it's like this, it's weirdly full of garbage and like spray paint. And stuff.
Right. Yeah, like this is the New York from the Ninja Turtles movies. Like,
yeah.
like everything is hostile to everyone. There's a homeless man sleeping in the back of the theater.
Yeah.
Like it's – how did he get a golden ticket?
The graffiti in the theater is not just like, oh, this is such a like bad neighborhood. There's graffiti all over the theater. Like there's graffiti that says restrooms with an arrow. So it's like, wait, did the theater manager do that? And if he did, why didn't he just buy a sign? And if it
it's
was
my
like
– tag.
Yeah. Was it a gang member? And if so, why was he being so helpful? Like, right. nothing about that makes sense.
That's the way that Michael Bloomberg tags things. He was probably mayor at the time.
He blamed it on Bernie Sanders.
That's right.
Bernie Sanders all going around telling people where the restroom is.
Yeah. He's so goddamn helpful, that Sanders.
But this kid, he's going to go watch this movie, but just as he's about to leave, he gets mugged by some guy who forces himself in. And
the apartment, yeah.
Yeah, forces himself into the apartment and takes this kid hostage with a switchblade. And at one point, he even, like, dares Danny, the boy, to grab the switchblade when he puts it down. But Danny just can't do it. He doesn't have the will. He can't act. He can't make action.
He's not a hero.
He's not a hero. So it's not going very well for him so far.
That's a brutal beginning to a kid's movie, too, by the way.
Yeah,
like,
right?
This kid getting kidnapped, cuffed into
his own home.
Into his own home. This guy could do what? Like, it's scary.
This kid had action figures for kids.
This movie makes the world so scary that I don't even want to open the door anymore. Like, he opens it 5 inches, not even more than, like, the deadbolt thing can go, chain.
I know. And when he's, like, leaving the theater for the first time, there's all these people in the streets, like reaching for him and stuff. Did you see that? Like, he's walking down the street, and this guy goes, and swipes at him.
That's the weird thing about this movie is, like, reality is so surreal. Like,
yeah, exactly.
He watches a movie and you're like, oh, that's a movie. And then he steps into the real world and it's like a Frank Miller comic or something. Like, it doesn't feel grounded in the way it should be.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. It's very weird. Because when they go into, like, the fake world, there's, like, this nice new police station,
right.
stuff like that.
Yeah. It's...
And it just feels more like that feels more like now. Like, things are brand new
Spending
buildings.
Spending a lot of time in police stations, Blaine.
They're all LEED certified. They're very nice.
Yeah, but eventually he gets to see this preview of the movie that he wants to see. But before he does that, sort of because he's had a bad time, his projectionist friend Nick, who's played by the judge from Miracle on 34th Street, he gives
Robert
him...
Robert Prosky? Is
yeah,
that his name?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. He gives him a... magic ticket. I don't know if... Okay, I'm not sure if he knows that it's magic, but it does come from Harry Houdini, so that would make you think it's magic, but I don't think Harry Houdini did real magic. Or did he?
No. This was my first problem with this movie.
Okay.
It's like, not only is Houdini not a real... Like, he was an illusionist, obviously, but
yeah,
he also...
Yeah, he's a real magician.
Yeah.
He's not a fake magic person.
He's not a sorcerer.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is, like, the other thing he's famous for is going around and, like, busting up, like, debunking people that claimed they actually did have magic powers.
Right.
Mm. So...
He'd be busting and be like, that ticket's fake?
Yeah, like, why...
Punch him in the stomach.
Well, you gotta have a ticket, Danny, to see a movie. And have I got just the one? See, when I was about your age, Harry Houdini played this theater, and my pop took me backstage to see him after the show. And he made a gesture, Houdini did, like this. And all of a sudden, this was in his hand. And he said to me, he whispered, he said, this is a magic ticket. It was given to me by the best magician in India, and it was given to him by the best magician in Tibet. It's a passport.
But why would this movie is making the implication that he was really magic, and then he was going around
cursing
saying that there
tickets?
Was no magic. I don't know. But
maybe
then at the end of
the
movie, not to jump ahead to the very end, but like after we find out the ticket is magic, the projectionist says to the little boy, like, "I think you were the real magic." It's like, what? It wasn't even the ticket?
Yeah.
He's a projectionist. What the fuck does he know?
That's true. And also, even if, like, forgetting if he knows this magic or not, it was a, like, ticket that Houdini owned. It's worth some money. Why not, like, sell it to a collector and maybe renovate that theater a little bit?
Buy a
Get
sign.
A real sign.
Yeah.
But this something weird happens while this kid is watching the movie because the ticket glows and does some weird electricity shit. And then, well, he's watching the movie and, like, at one point, the bad guy, like, throws a stick of dynamite through the screen and it explodes. And the kid sort of wakes up in the back of Jack Slater's car.
So we know that this whole movie is just the kid died, and this is like the oh my God, moments before his death. He's imagining all this future life.
Wait, so he died, but the movie was still magic because the dynamite came
through?
Yeah,
yeah, no, no, totally. Oh, okay. Totally, but he died there.
Film is magic.
Right.
Yeah, and this is confusing for him because he was in the real world, and now here is his cinematic hero, and it's confusing for everybody.
Especially the audience. Especially. And he like, because you'd think this kid would kind of accept what he's in real fast because he's such like an action movie junkie and he's a small child who was given a magic ticket that kind of believed in the magic of that ticket.
Like, dude, you're given a fucking magic ticket.
Yeah. Like, you think he'd come, but he spends a long time being like, one-liners? Like, action?
Bad puns?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, this kid's not too bright. Which Death tells him later.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, rub it in, Death.
Just when you think Death couldn't be any worse, he makes fun of you.
Jesus, just kill me. You don't have to fucking kill my ego. But he finds himself in this movie, and he doesn't know how to convince his hero, I keep on wanting to say Christian Slater, Jack Slater, that this is in fact a movie.
Right.
He's like, things don't work like this in the real world.
Yeah, because he's saying everything that like normally happens in an action movie, and Jack Slater's like, yeah, that's what happens all the time. Like, this is just my life. Like, I understand it.
Yeah. So they go to the police station, which is a palace. And there are some notable cameos by Robert Patrick from Terminator 2 and Sharon Stone, who's not in Terminator 2.
She's supposed to be like her Basic Instinct character.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not an action movie,
no.
Incidentally.
Yeah, weird. It's all weird.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this world isn't exactly an action movie either because it's just sort of all over the place fictional. Like, one of the not-so-action movie things in the movie is that there is an animated cat detective.
Whiskers, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Voiced by Danny DeVito. And this cat likes to, I don't know, I guess sexually assault female officers for fun.
No, no, for laughs.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the 90s. Is it the 90s? It's the 90s.
It's the 90s.
Here we go.
Yeah, but don't worry, because later he'll be the hero.
Yeah, that was the moment rewatching it where I was like, okay, there's some stuff I like and stuff I don't like, but it's not a train wreck. And then the cartoon cat shows up and you're like, oh, yeah.
Oh,
right.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that every woman is just like a sexual object in this movie, like even Jack Slater's daughter.
Right.
The first thing she does is kiss this young boy.
Yeah. Yeah, God, she supposedly is doing it for some sorority thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Played by Bridget Wilson.
Yeah. Sampras.
Not Sampras yet.
Minus Sampras.
Minus the Sampras.
Yeah.
But the cartoon cat is awful.
The cartoon cat is awful. Yeah.
Like, it's funny that they're all defending it. Like, he's one of the best officers we have. But it's not. It's
great.
Yeah, like the logic, that's where the logic of this movie starts to kind of implode for me. Because, yeah, like you were saying, it's not that he's in an action movie. He's in like almost an alternate reality.
It's like Toontown.
Yeah, exactly. It's like Toontown for random movie tropes.
Yeah.
It's every movie ever made.
Yeah.
It's not a genre world. It's like Hollywood world.
Exactly. Yeah. But also every movie ever made consists of like 3 to 4 recognizable characters.
Yeah. 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 And we get some more of the metafictional sort of stuff when F. Murray Abraham drops by and the kid recognizes him as the guy who tried to kill Mozart.
Funniest joke in the movie.
That for that line alone, yeah. This movie is worth it.
It is, but what is that kid doing watching Amadeus? Like, he's an action movie junkie?
It's a classic.
It is a classic. I watched it when I was a kid. But still, it just... So weird.
Yeah.
I did love that, though.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, there's a couple moments that I do like in this movie. But the boy still can't convince Arnie that he is in a movie, so he brings him to a Blockbuster.
How would he convince him now?
I don't know. Netflix?
And would it be a magic smartphone?
Just ripping it in half.
It's one of those foldable phones.
Oh, yeah, good.
Something.
Yeah, so he takes him to Blockbuster, and the standee for Terminator 2 has Sylvester Stallone in it.
That's pretty good, right?
Yeah, that's funny.
I remember liking that.
I mean, they still made Terminator 2 in the world of this movie.
Yeah, well, it's a great movie. Would you want to live in a world without Terminator 2?
Wait, so the T-1000 is like a person in this universe, but they also made the movie Terminator 2?
Yeah, that's really weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it isn't possible.
What's not possible? He's fantastic. This is his best performance ever.
But that was you. You were in that movie.
You were in a movie?
Yes. It was called The Girl of My Dreams. It starred you. As a matter of fact, we had this very romantic scene together.
Yeah, there are some other, like, moments that don't match up because, yeah, like, Terminator 2 is Sylvester Stallone, but if you look very closely on the video rack, apparently you can see a copy of Raw Deal starring Arnold Schwarzenegger with him on the cover.
Oh, fuck off, movie.
Movie broken. I'm out. Yeah. In order to convince Arnie that he has seen the movie, that he knows what's going to happen, he takes him to the drug dealer's house and tries to tell him, yeah, this is the drug dealer that you've been going, trying to catch. This is the bad guy. And Arnie basically, like, laughs it off.
Mm-hmm.
But it does make the bad guy, Benedict, suspicious.
We should say played by the great Charles Dance.
Yeah, who is a dancer.
No.
What's he from?
He's in lots of stuff, but, like, most
say
recently
the thing
he was
that
in,
people know.
He's in Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
And I think he's on The Crown now.
Ooh.
Playing the same character from Last Action Hero.
The eye.
Yeah. One eye.
That's what you don't see at the end of the movie. He escapes into all fiction, and now he's just...
he's everywhere.
He's
all
just
times.
Murdering people in The Crown.
Oh,
now.
Man, that's fucked. Yeah. Yeah. But so he wonders, how does this boy know this? And starts to sort of look into him, and, you know, he's going to figure out the thing.
Yeah. 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 And he tracks the boy down to, like, Arnold Schwarzenegger or Jack Slater's daughter's house or his ex-wife's house.
Mm-hmm.
Is that where this whole thing goes down? I'm just like, so.
I think so.
I guess it's the world of, like, the Hollywood movie, so he just knows where every character is at all times, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the daughter kicks a little bit of ass.
Yeah.
And then Arnie comes in and kicks the rest of the ass.
Yes. And then she's out of it, right?
Yeah, she never shows up again.
She never shows up again in the movie.
Because they set up like
a romance
thing between the kid and her. Even though I guess the kid's much younger than her, but he's kind of like, even when he's in the real world, he has kind of a crush on her.
Yeah.
On the, her cardboard cutout.
Yeah, like even when they first show her credit in the fake movie, like it seems like
he's going.
It's setting it up for like.
His sexual awakening.
Yeah.
Right.
Which would be awful. So thank God this movie didn't do that.
There's also a line early on when Arnold Schwarzenegger is talking to him about when he has him in the car, he says something like, you're not an adult. Like, being adult means dealing with this and that and premature ejaculation or something.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? Yeah. What? They sold Burger King cups for this. Why is an adult man telling this child about premature ejaculation?
So he can bring it back later.
Again,
which the kid does.
It again at the end.
Yeah, good callback.
Yeah.
There's some other really good humor in this movie as well. Like,
oh, Jesus.
When to track down one of the bad guys, they go to a funeral for a man called Leo DeFart.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they have to, at one point, there's like a bomb on the guy's body in his corpse. And so they have to stop this bomb, which, by the way, is set by Charles Dance, the great Charles Dance, pulling his finger.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is it's sort of like they end up like putting it on a crane. It gets hoisted up and then it ends up dropping into the tar pits.
Yeah.
And so when it explodes, it just makes like a big tar bubble,
mm-hmm.
which sort of deflates. And then Arnie or somebody, I'm assuming it's Arnie,
yep.
says, "Silent but deadly."
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
Huh?
He says like he's going to pass gas one last time. Like, there's a whole bunch of fart jokes in there for no reason.
There's a reason. It's so that this movie is a comedy.
I mean, the joke that I hated the most, because it just made no sense, was Charles Dance, like, snapping his finger and the dogs making a pyramid out of themselves. And he's like, the dogs are really well trained. I was like, how did that get past anyone writing the script? Like, this sucks so bad.
That's the other thing. It's like there's humor in action movies, but there's not like elaborate fart jokes in Lethal Weapon or Die Hard or anything.
No.
It's the one-liners, and they have the one-liners. They do that, and they're like, but let's go further into stupid. Let's really like marinate in stupid here.
The world of the movie is not – yeah, like you said, it's not really an action movie. It's almost cartoonish. Like the bad guys are throwing Acme dynamite at people. It's ostensibly doing like a satire of those action movies, but it's really just silliness.
Yeah.
Like it's cartoony. It's like Looney Tunes.
Yeah. I mean, I think a satire has to be more on point. Like, this is kind of just like a bad guy in this movie shooting at Arnie, like just indiscriminate everywhere. Like, there was no focus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But anyway, so Benedict, the one-eyed bad guy, he sort of gets the golden ticket through stealing Danny's wallet. And then he realizes that he can go through the real world. So that's what he does. And this is a whole different game because I guess in the world of the movies, when you shoot somebody, the cops will come. But in the real world, if you shoot somebody a bunch of times in the middle of the street, nothing will happen.
Yeah, this is like a dystopia. This is horrifying New York.
I mean, he's like on Fifth Avenue shooting a man to death and yelling, "I'm doing this on purpose," and nobody does anything. He's Donald Trump.
Oh.
Oh, man.
Well, also, I kind of like the idea of it, which is kind of like another movie we've talked about on the show, Time After Time,
right?
Where they go to the future, H.G. Wells and Jack the Ripper, and Jack the Ripper sees how kind of prevalent like murder and serial killers are, and how awful the world is, and basically is like, I'm at home here.
Right.
Like, I'm more relevant here than H.G. Wells is. And it's kind of the same thing here, where he walks out in the real world and you know, he has that line to Arnold Schwarzenegger later, or to, you know, Jack, not... but he says something like, you know, we're in the real world where I can get away with
being
bad. I can win.
Bad guys.
And I thought, that's a really interesting idea, like to have the villain be more welcome in the real world than in the movie world. I thought that was interesting. Mm-hmm. They don't do much with it.
No.
But it was a cool idea.
Yeah.
Definitely.
For sure. And a bunch of other stuff happens. Like at one point, the kid brings Slater home. And he meets his mom, and then I'm pretty sure they have sex.
Yeah, they bone.
They definitely bone in the middle of the night, because the next morning they're like, you know, he comes down and they're sitting at the table together, and they know each other real well.
Yeah, his mom's like, he only lasted 1 minute though, premature ejaculator.
She should have been like, it just dissolved. So, like, you know, that would have been a good joke if they tried to have sex and he couldn't do it, because it always just cuts between. Like,
oh, that'd be great.
You know, getting into bed in the next morning.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Benedict, he reaches back into the movie world and pulls out the Tom Noonan character, the Ripper, and sends him after Arnold Schwarzenegger.
The real Arnold Schwarzenegger.
The real Arnold Schwarzenegger.
In this movie, going to his own movie premiere.
Yeah, that's right. It's the big premiere of the new Jack Slater movie. And what's his name? Tom Noonan just walks up the red carpet like he's Tom Noonan or something.
Like he's the giant star that he is. Well, I do love this part because, yeah, the Ripper walks into the premiere. They all think it's him in the costume. Yeah. And then Rick Ducommun, who we talked about. From Die Hard. Who plays his agent, comes up just like, Tom, what are you doing? Like, Jack Nicholson didn't show up to Batman dressed as the Joker.
Yeah, that was good. That was good. I like that line, and I also like the part where they show the real Tom Noonan not in makeup because that guy rocks.
Yeah, he's great.
But it's a big premiere. Everybody is there. You got Jean-Claude Van Damme. You got Little Richard. You have
who goes to every movie premiere?
Yeah. Chevy Chase.
Chevy Chase gets body checked.
You know, not to skip too far ahead, but I do want to talk about like some of the behind the scenes stuff for this movie and the premiere of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's weird how accurately this kind of predicted that, because one of the things that happened with this movie is kind of the writing was on the wall in terms of how much of a bomb this would be,
right?
How bad it was. So there weren't actually that many A-list stars at the premiere itself. So when I saw like Little Richard, and people was like, oh, this is weird, because this is not that far off from what like at the actual premiere, it was like, hey, Danny DeVito's here, and like, you know, it was not the A-list names you'd expect.
They couldn't get MC Hammer.
And the other thing was, I watched like an awkward interview with Schwarzenegger on the real red carpet for Last Action Hero.
Ooh.
And he has a similarly awkward interview in this red carpet where he tries to plug Planet Hollywood.
Right. And Maria Shriver keeps telling him not to.
I thought that was really funny.
That was really funny. That was good.
No.
And remember, don't plug the restaurants. I just hate it when you plug the restaurants or the gyms. It's so tacky.
Benedict is going to kill Schwarzenegger.
Schwarzenegger? Who's Slater?
Bingo. We kill less people in this movie. This movie, we only killed 48 people compared to the last one where we kill 119. Mm-hmm. And I want to make sure that the action fans understand we make up for it. We did a good story, a lot of emotions, depth, dimensions.
And at this premiere, Jack Slater has to, like, you know, stop the bad guy from killing Arnold Schwarzenegger, and he gets tackled by Arnold Schwarzenegger. Huh? It's crazy because they're the same guy. Blaine, they're the same guy.
I don't get it, man. I don't get it.
Well, it's fun. It's a lot of fun. And you get to see all the celebrity cameos, and then eventually, like, it comes full circle to the movie because Tom Noonan has the boy, Danny, up on the roof, just like the scene.
Not the real Tom Noonan.
No.
Not the actor Tom Noonan. He's like, I'm sick of fucking acting.
He had a psychotic break.
I only get bit parts. I'm such a good actor.
Stay away from me, Kaufman.
Kaufman's been following him for weeks, just hiding behind trees.
Damn it.
But it's a scenario that echoes the scenario that the movie character Jack Slater had, where his son was up on the roof and his child died in the movie.
Yeah.
And later on, and earlier in the movie, there's a scene where Arnold Schwarzenegger has to sort of like reconcile himself in the real world. Like, he realizes that somebody invented this scenario where his child is murdered before his eyes.
I also like that.
And I liked that a lot. It was really good. And another thing, you know, they built this shiny thing they never used again.
Yeah, they mention it briefly when he meets the real Arnold Schwarzenegger and he says, like, you caused me so much pain or something.
Yeah.
There's like so much pathos there that they just, you know, glide right by and don't delve into in any way, which is so frustrating because that's so sad and kind of amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. It kind of reminded me of Stranger Than Fiction, right? Which is
right.
Zach Penn did that?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, did he?
I think maybe. I might be wrong on that. Look it up.
Who's, you know, the original screenwriter of we'll talk about
he
that.
Did the he, story
he gets
of
the
this.
Story
right,
credit.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But so they take care of Tom Noonan. They electrocute him. And Danny is still alive. But Benedict comes.
Sorry. It was Zach Helm.
Zach Helm.
Zach Helm penned that script as opposed to Zach Penn helming that script.
Oh, God damn. The podcast is over. That was amazing.
We might be in an action movie because that was a pun.
That was so good. Jesus.
The big final thing is that Benedict is, you know, confronting him on the roof. And he says he has all this power because he can just go into the movies and get whatever bad guy he wants. He can get Dracula. He can get King Kong. All the fictional bad guys. Hitler, he can get. Why are you guys laughing?
He does say Hitler. He does.
It was like one of these things, not like the other. He's going through a list of all these.
Yeah.
I guess he can bring Hitler back, but they don't go into like.
Downfall. He can go into downfall and bring Hitler.
You get the Taika Waititi Hitler.
That would have been great.
Yep.
Yeah, but like there's so many other, like, you know, slashers that he could have mentioned anyway.
But that makes me wonder, like, in the movie universe, did World War II not happen?
Oh,
was it Hitler fictional to him?
Or maybe was there a cutscene where he was a Holocaust denier?
It could be that.
He's a real bad guy.
Yeah. And then he feigns to be out of bullets, but he shoots Arnie, and Arnie is dying. Mm. He's dying, and the boy doesn't know what to do, so he tries to bring him back into the movie theater where the wounds aren't as – where it'll just be a flesh wound.
Well, he pulls out a gun and waves it at a bunch of paramedics.
Oh, yeah.
That was weird. They all flee the scene.
Yeah. They all just run away.
Yeah.
I think that checks. If a kid pulls a gun on me, I'm going to, briskly walk away.
Briskly walk. I'm going to stride away.
And at the same time, something especially creepy happens. They're watching The Seventh Seal at some rep cinema uptown.
It specifically says, like, art house cinema inside the marquee.
And it's packed. Wow. It's a brand new print, 35mm. So, but, like, Death's scythe comes out of the screen, and then Death just walks out of the screen and starts walking through Manhattan.
You know what I don't get is his scythe comes out of the screen, and it's like three stories tall.
It's so creepy.
And then he comes out and he's like just the regular head of a human being.
Perspective.
He's also played by Ian McKellen.
Yes. Yeah.
I did not remember this at all.
Why is he in this movie? It's so weird. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, before X-Men, he was not like the superstar that he is. Or I guess before Lord of the Rings. I guess that was what he was in first.
Yeah. And he's a pretty big British star, wasn't he?
Yeah, but like British star.
It was a weird thing. Also, shouldn't he have been Swedish?
Yeah. Mm. Was Donark Erkenland not available? I don't know who played that in Seventh Seal. It's a name like that.
Just blatant Swedish
bigotry. I may have gotten that mixed up with some IKEA things I need to buy.
God. There's so many weird random actors in this movie. We didn't even really talk about like how Anthony Quinn is one of the other villains.
Right.
And Art Carney is in this movie for some reason.
Yeah.
Who else? There's just so many just odd random people. Action movie staples. Like, I can't think of another action movie with Art Carney in it.
Who is Truman's best friend in The Truman Show?
Oh, Noah Emmerich.
Yeah, he was in the first scene of this movie.
Yeah, he plays one of the cops.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So little cameos.
I don't think he was supposed to be an actor.
It's just that he was an actor at the time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I found a lot of the cameos like really distracting. Like the MC Hammer cameo just slows down the scene. And even like a lot of the other ones that come sort of quickly, you're just like, why? Why? Yeah. You know,
they should have recruited his cartoon avatar to come out of the screen and help.
Yeah. But eventually he gets him back into the movie screen and the doctor in the movie just says, what are you talking about? It's just a flesh wound. And everything is back to normal.
Mm-hmm.
And the kid goes on with his life. He offers the projectionist the ticket and he doesn't want it. He just wants to bore him with more old stories.
I remember when I was a kid, like, watching this, and when Death was like, I would be looking for the other half of the ticket, I was like, oh, my God. Like, it was such a revelation that they're, like, that's how he would.
But the camera lingers on the ticket box.
Oh, I know. That was kind of, also, when I saw it this time, I was like, oh, yeah.
Why did they rip the ticket at all? He owns the theater. They don't need to do that.
Yeah.
He should get into the premiere. Right.
But also, when they
When did they rip the ticket? I'm confused.
They ripped the ticket when he's going into the preview. So technically, you shouldn't even need a ticket.
Yeah.
But also, my question is, when they open the box and all the tickets spill out, they all look the same. Are you telling me that this theater has been using the same kind of tickets since 1918 or whenever Harry Houdini died?
Oh, that's the other thing. Then the projector's not working when they're trying to save Jack, and the ghost of Harry Houdini, like, starts making the reels spin around, and because the old man goes, Houdini! What's even happening?
Like, Romoli! He's like, yeah. Won a game.
Is the ghost of Houdini from a movie? Is
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I do want to say also, like, I do know that Houdini made a lot of movies. And, like, I know he, like,
sure.
He may have even pioneered some, like, cinematic tricks. Maybe that's what this is a reference to?
I don't know.
Maybe.
The magic of cinema?
I don't know. Yeah, it's strange. But that is, that's the last action hero. And we have a lot more to get to after this last action break.
It's just a break, Rob.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back to Rewatchability. We are talking about Last Action Hero, not the Last Action Hero. And guys, I have some trivia questions for you, so
hit us.
Yes, get ready. So, question the first. This movie features a number of people involved in the film Predator. How many? And name them.
Okay.
You guys can both do this together. It's collaborative.
But how many does it have?
Well, that's, you have to figure it out.
Oh, okay.
Well, at least two. Jack Slater and Arnold Schwarzenegger. We got two there.
Arnold Schwarzenegger. Does Shane Black have a cameo in this?
Well, I don't think he needs to have a cameo. He wrote the script.
Oh, so just involved.
Just involved. Involved. Okay, involved. Okay. Yeah, involved.
Well, Shane Black is Shane in Black. Predator, and he wrote this. Who else?
No, John McTiernan? Did he have anything?
Well, John McTiernan directed Predator. Yeah,
there
we go. Yeah.
Okay.
Three?
No, Alan Silvestri did the Predator score. And we should say Michael Kamen did the score for this.
Yes.
Who did Die Hard and uses some of the Die Hard score when they reference it.
Yeah.
In one of the scenes, which I...
That's good.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, at least three.
Three is good.
Are they actors?
They are actors. So they're it's a little tougher because they're not as well known as Arnold Schwarzenegger, but one of them is Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
No.
Yes, he played the Predator.
they didn't use any of the footage.
It counts. And the other one, Blaine, I'm really disappointed with you because we've covered this guy in a previous question. Sven Ole Thorsen, who is Arnold Schwarzenegger's frequent collaborator.
Fuck. God damn it. Thorsen?
Yeah, and he plays one of the guards in Mallrats. That's his biggest role.
Yeah.
And he was he's the polyamorous partner of Grace Jones, which is also good for him.
wait, just like in real life?
Yeah.
Is where you're just going to drop that?
Okay.
I know, it's impressive. She's like a sex symbol.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so this one. This one's a little bit easier for you.
Okay.
So Charles Dance plays the villain Benedict and at one point threatens to get all these movie villains such as Dracula and Hitler.
famous for movies and nothing else.
to attack all those guys. But actually, Charles Dance is in a Dracula movie. I was wondering if you guys could name that Dracula movie.
Dead and Loving It.
Yes.
No. No, definitely not.
Is it an old one?
No.
Does he play Dracula?
He plays a master vampire.
Ooh, damn.
Is it Dracula Untold?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
I've never seen it. That's just, I think, the most recent Dracula.
That's Process of Elimination.
Which I think was supposed to be hitched on to the dark universe that never happened.
Exactly.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. He plays master vampire and Caligula, who apparently gives Dracula his powers. Through grossness, I guess.
That would have been great if he named, like, I can bring them all. Jason, Freddy Krueger, Caligula.
No thanks. Okay, that was good, Jam.
Thank you.
Okay, so this one's a little tougher. Two actors in this movie passed away shortly after the filming of this, making it their last on-screen appearances. Can you name those two actors?
MC Hammer.
Yes.
Oh, Jesus.
Rip Hammer.
Rip Hammer. What about the projectionist? Was he? Is he still alive?
Yeah, he's. I mean, I don't know if
he's
still
dead
alive
now, but
he was definitely in things after this.
Okay.
He was also Mrs. Doubtfire. I don't know when that year that came out.
Yeah, that was after this. Yeah, okay. Wasn't it? Died right after this?
Yeah. Like, as soon as the camera stopped rolling.
Jesus, it was the only thing keeping him alive.
That cartoon cat?
Yeah. No, one of them was Art Carney.
Okay.
Who has a really good exit line, though I can't remember what it is. But it's appropriate because he's never seen on screen again.
Oh, so this
he's like, that's all for me.
This was his last on-screen appearance.
Yeah.
Wow. What a legacy.
What a legacy.
Oh, damn.
And the other guy.
It's just funny. He was, he was in one of the most beloved TV shows about spousal abuse in history, and then he ended his career in this.
Who was the second guy?
The other guy was Toru Tanaka, who is maybe better known to some people as Professor Tanaka from the WWF, but also played Sub-Zero in The Running Man.
Oh, okay.
And he played the henchman guy.
Oh, yeah.
But he passed away shortly after this movie.
Was it because Ian McKellen touched them as he passed?
Yes.
Leave him alone in his dressing room, guys.
Thou shalt pass!
On.
Oh, God. Yeah. That was pretty good. You guys did okay. Some of those were pretty tough. I mean, this was a movie that was a bit of a debacle.
Right.
As I think you probably know, JM. It was from a script originally by Zach Penn and Adam Leff, and it was meant to parody the typical action film screenplays of writers such as Shane Black and directors such as John McTiernan. So it became a thing when Shane Black and John McTiernan were both hired for the film that was making fun of them.
Yeah. Like, they said they even went to, like, the MPAA archives or something and got copies of Shane Black's scripts and read them to,
that's awesome,
to kind of pick apart, and then had their script rewritten by Shane Black.
Yeah.
Which is a weird feedback loop of insanity.
Yeah, I feel like they probably couldn't make fun of themselves, right? Like, it would be hard to see yourself that way, like being parodied.
Yeah, well, I think that there is, like, I think that the movie does try to have a sense of humor about itself, but it's not a total sense of humor, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't, there's something about it that is being, we like to see these people, these movies, big things, superstars, A-listers spoofed, but it seems so on the nose, and it doesn't, like, it seems like they still want to do the thing that they love doing, which is making action movies.
Well, John McTiernan said something like, this was the worst experience he had in Hollywood making movies, which is kind of crazy considering he went to jail because of something he did while making a movie.
Yeah, oh, but jail's nothing compared to Last Action Hero. I don't care. I'm never going back to Last Action Hero. It was also inspired in another sort of full circle way by The Simpsons, which had already been doing their Rainer Wolfcastle parodies.
Oh, yeah.
And it later, actually, The Simpsons referenced Last Action Hero in an episode where Bart tells Rainier his last movie sucked, and then Quimby says, yeah, magic ticket my ass.
Oh.
Man, I don't remember
that's
that.
A weird feedback loop, too.
Yeah.
I actually went and read some of the original scripts.
Did you?
Is it any better than the script we got?
Yeah. I mean, it's, like, darker. I think, like, also, like, it has a very clear theme and message that the final movie completely
that's
undercuts.
Nice. Yeah.
In the script that I read, which, like, originally was called Extremely Violence, but the script I saw was still called Last Action Hero, so maybe they retitled it while they were still working on it, because they basically got fired and Shane Black came in.
Right. Yeah.
But they had it be, instead of a magic ticket, the projectionist is basically the devil.
Oh, okay.
And in the first scene where he's in the movie theater, instead of a magic ticket, he gives the kid a gun.
Oh, my God.
And it was basically like, one day you're going to use this and, like, kill the guy who wronged you or something.
Wow. Whoa.
And then he just gets sucked into the movie. I'm not exactly sure how. It's just kind of like a magic moment. And then at the very end, when him and Jack confront, he's not called Jack in the original, he was called Arno, which they had to change once Arnold Schwarzenegger was cast. But the villain reveals himself to be the projectionist, who again is like a demon or the devil.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And the devil's whole thing is like, remember that gun I gave you? You got to take it out and kill me because I'm the bad guy. Like, and so He just gunned down Arnold Schwarzenegger. So
that's kind of cool.
And so the kid's really mad, and he's like pointing the gun at him, and he's like, you know, gonna pull the trigger. And Arno is basically like, "Don't do it! Like, don't do it!" And he's like, "Yes, you have to do it! Like, gun me down! It's what I told you to do." So basically, the whole movie seems, and eventually he puts it down.
Yeah,
but the whole movie seems to be
some fucking Star Wars shit there.
But the whole movie, the message seems to be like, are violent movies corrupting kids to the point where they will commit real life violence?
Well, and that's kind of what I thought and kind of remembered this movie being, was that like he learned a lesson, because when the kid is like, "Stab me in the back, kid, if you're going to do it, like, do it. Here's the knife," at the beginning with the robber, and he doesn't do it. I was like, oh, this kid like will learn that you can solve your problems without violence.
Yeah,
but it's the opposite.
No. He waves his gun at a bunch of paramedics.
Yeah, exactly.
Those people are not paid enough for that shit.
Yeah. No, that's the thing. He learns to be very like cavalier with a gun by the end of this movie. Like,
it's not the great message.
No, and it's the opposite message of this movie. And that's what's kind of bothersome about it to me in retrospect.
They even had AC/DC write a song for it called Big Gun. Though maybe that's a euphemism.
Well, also, like, when Arnold Schwarzenegger got cast in this, like, he was a big part of the reason why they scaled a lot of the violent content back, I guess. And he wanted, I guess because he had a family, he wanted it to be more family friendly. He pushed for the PG-13.
But then why do you have this ending where the kid learns to be violent instead of the other way around?
Well, that's, and also I think there's another, it goes into like a larger problem about Hollywood, where like I was even watching his interviews on the red carpet for the real life premiere, where he was saying, you know, like, "I'm so proud of this movie because it's PG-13. You can take the whole family."
Right.
And he also, like, he didn't apparently want his action figure to have a gun.
Right.
Like, so he was kind of like acting like it was this nice family thing, but it's still, you know, there's no blood, but there's still lots of people getting shot and blown up and thrown off a building. So it's this kind of broader Hollywood problem where, you know, we're kind of coding violence in a way that's digestible to young people because it doesn't, you know, tick certain boxes that are unacceptable to the MPAA.
No F words, no boobies.
Yeah, so that kind of central hypocrisy of this movie just kind of irks me thinking about it now.
The movie undoes itself. It's like trying to say one thing and then says a completely opposite thing at the end. It really goes into contortions to even exist. It's horrible. Thematically, it's horrible. But I'm glad the original script like was what I imagined and remembered this movie to be, which was kind of like, you don't need to be an action hero. You can be a hero without fucking killing someone.
Yeah, exactly. That Hamlet scene was from the original script.
Nice. Oh, one thing to mention about that Hamlet scene is they show the Laurence Olivier Hamlet, and the teacher is Joan Plowright, who was Laurence Olivier's wife.
Oh, crazy.
Oh,
Very meta.
That's a cool connection. Yeah.
She could have brought her husband back from the dead if she had that ticket.
Oh, my God.
There's your reboot.
Yeah, I can see how the devil, though, was a little – that's like a little weird to have a demon and stuff like that. Like, I don't know.
It's a bit scary for 1990s America.
Yeah.
Well, it was coming off of like the satanic panic of the 80s.
Sure.
So I think it would have been even more relevant at the time.
Yeah.
You're right.
But this movie, it came out and it did not make a lot of money, not as much as they thought it would, because they were positioned for it to be a huge hit. Like, Terminator 2 was Arnie's last movie opening, and of course that was one of the biggest movies ever. So they expected that this would be everything, and it had all the elements. It had the John McTiernan, it had the Shane Black, it had all these stars, but they released it the week after Jurassic Park.
That sucks. That's bad timing.
That's bad timing. And so it opened at number 2 and it made $50 million, I think, domestically. But
like overall or the opening weekend?
I think
opening weekend. It made over $100 million overall.
Yeah. But it only made like $137 million worldwide, which I think is less than it cost to put together. So it was.
And from what I remember from the marketing, it was fucking marketed everywhere. So that must have been so expensive to do on top of the movie's budget already.
Yeah. Apparently, I don't know whether it's a rumor or whether it actually happened, but they were going to paint Arnold's face on a space shuttle.
Okay, I'll show. Okay, I have notes about this because I've extensively researched this.
What?
Okay,
really?
I'm not. Yeah, I still have notes about some of the making of this movie and the clusterfuckery behind it. But while we're talking about the promotion, so I like wrote about this a few years ago, and I like actually had to for the first time like pay for a newspaper subscription.
Whoa!
Because I was like, I gotta get a look at this. The spaceship to promote Last Action Hero. So, well, before we get to the spaceship, the other thing they did was, you know that inflatable Arnold Schwarzenegger that's in at the premiere in this movie?
Oh, right, yeah.
They actually erected it in Times Square. But
then it lost all its air really quickly?
No. Metaphorically, because the sculpture, the inflatable Arnie, was carrying a shotgun and a big thing of dynamite. And they put it up in Times Square 3 days after the World Trade Center bombing.
What, are you kidding me?
No.
Whoa.
So people complained. And
maybe, just a little bit.
So instead, to promote...
Oh my God, the movie,
they moved it out of Times Square and put it in a barge, like out by the water. Here, I've got pictures for you here. You can see there he is in the city. And
wow.
Then they moved him out onto this barge that still says Schwarzenegger underneath.
We'll tweet those out.
Yeah, we'll tweet them out. It's horrific.
That's amazing.
And then
they should make him dance with Lady Liberty, huh?
And then the other thing they did was they decided to like really pioneer the advertising for this movie that was going to be so huge. They would have the movie's like logo, Last Action Hero, on the side of a space shuttle that NASA was going to send up.
Mm-hmm.
And they paid $500,000 to
Jesus.
Do that.
That's not bad.
And but it turns out that space travel is tricky.
Oh.
So, yeah. So the movie came out in June. The shuttle got delayed until August. So by the time the shuttle went up, the movie was already a bomb. But I do have another picture here. This is a picture I was able to find online. This is the mock-up. It has Last Action Hero on the side. Uh-huh. And then on the rockets, it says Schwarzenegger.
Whoa.
Right.
So it's pretty
the rocket
glorious.
That will return to Earth. Like, that's just a booster rocket.
They also had a thing where, like, the studio set up a thing where you could call and leave voicemails that they would record and put in the rocket to send to space. It was weird. Oh,
holy shit.
Jeez.
I mean, this movie famously set in space. Like, why would you?
Like I said, it kind of became clear by the premiere that this wasn't going to be a hit. They just kept throwing money at it. So the premiere had a replica of Elsinore Castle from Hamlet.
Because that was such a big scene in the movie.
Yeah. It had a dangling Leo the Fart mannequin hanging from a crane.
Okay,
like in
that's
the
awesome.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of...
No!
But it's cheap at least. It's not half of it. You just get a dummy and put in a costume.
But nobody cares about that stuff. Nobody's seen the movie yet.
That's a really good point. And Shane Black did say at the premiere, it was like one of those things where it was this super big party and then everyone was just kind of standing around in silence because no one wanted to talk about the movie.
Make no mistake. Jack Slater is the Last Action Hero. And now you can be Slater.
Jack, help! Pick on someone your own size, Ripper. You asked for it, Slater. Piece of cake.
Jack, look out!
Whack! Whack! You've ripped my shirt!
Big mistake.
Have a dumbbell, dumbbell. You're such a drip, Rip.
Heat Pack and Jack, Hook Watch and Danny, Axe Swing and Ripper, and Dynamite Jack Slater sold separately. New from Mattel.
Why does he have the cargo loader on his back from Alien?
Because he didn't want to have a gun.
Ah, so weird.
This is for murdering my son! Bang!
My life is an existential nightmare.
That's amazing. Did you have the toys?
I remember seeing them in the stores, but I did not have them. Mm. I mean, I love the idea that there's a Tom Noonan action figure out there.
Yeah, that's right.
This movie is a nightmare. There's just so many notes. There's so many articles with interviews.
Well, there was
talking about what a nightmare this was to make.
There was a notorious. There was a chapter in a book by Nancy Griffin and Kim Master. Their book Hit and Run, about the John Peters sort of reign at whatever movie studio that was, has a whole chapter about Last Action Hero called "How They Built the Bomb."
Oh, wow. Oh my God!
Yeah,
and. They brought in Shane Black and his partner to rewrite Zach Penn's script, which kind of sucks for them. But even that was taken and rewritten to the point where Shane Black wasn't happy with it.
I'm sure.
Shane Black said they came up with some stuff they thought was pretty cool. Like at one point he said there was like a scratch in the film and Arnold Schwarzenegger reached up and grabbed it and stabbed a guy with it.
Oh my God.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah. That's awesome.
That's awesome.
And then that got taken away from him and given to William Goldman.
Yeah.
The great screenwriter.
Everything what? He touches turns to gold, man.
Who got $1 million for 4 weeks' work on this movie.
Oh my God.
And then they took that William Goldman script and gave it to Carrie Fisher to punch up.
What is going on?
Yeah. So all of it, again, like it's everything you love being piled on until it's just nothing. Like it's just so much stuff you love, yeah. It kills it.
I love William Goldman. I love Carrie Fisher.
Yeah.
All this stuff.
It's just everything.
It's like too many
awful.
Cooks, man.
That's and crazy. Like it's a contentious relationship between McTiernan and Shane Black and everyone, and then like Zach.
Well, because there's always a contentious relationship with Shane Black.
Yeah. Well, also, and then Zach Penn. You know, who was just like a guy, like it was a spec script that him and his friend wrote.
Right.
Yeah.
And it prompted this bidding war. And this was, I guess, the first movie they sold. So, you know, even though they were taken off of it, there was no hard feelings and they were offered a cameo in the movie. So he said he had a cameo as a police officer and spent a week shooting this movie only to be told by one of the other actors that he was actually being cropped out of the frame by the director out of spite.
Whoa,
what?
Really?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Jesus.
Just, there was no goodwill making this movie whatsoever from anyone.
It's like some guy approaches John Tiernan in jail. This is from Zach Penn.
Yeah. And it was just, it cost so much money, and they had this release date that they needed to hit because otherwise they wouldn't be destroyed by Jurassic Park, apparently. So they like could, you know, they didn't want to move this date. They had to do it. So like the producer said like they just had so much to edit. It was just a slog getting the finished thing. He said, if there'd been more time, there's a chance someone might have stood up and said, what the fuck are you doing with an animated cat? something which from the outside looking in looks like a decision of somebody using drugs. Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. Well, you know who Arnold Schwarzenegger blamed the failure of this movie on?
Democrats.
William Jefferson Clinton.
Really?
Yeah, that's right. Arnie says that it was one of those things where President Clinton was elected and the press somehow made the whole thing kind of political where they thought, okay, the 80s action movies guys are gone. Here's a perfect example. And they wrote this narrative before they saw the movie. The action hero era is over. Bill Clinton is in. The highbrow movies are the in thing. Now I couldn't recuperate.
When did he say that?
Not too long ago, I don't think.
Oh, wow.
I think it might have been when he was governor.
Because every other person involved with this movie was just like, yeah, it was just a kind of a disaster the whole way.
Well, it was Clinton.
It was the Democrats.
They said like the studio head, like McTiernan was having a frustrating time too because the studio head couldn't decide if they were making a family movie or like an action movie. Like no one knew who the target audience for this movie was. And even the fact that we felt that as kids,
yeah.
I think is indicative of just how off the mark they were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Like,
because kids are dumb. Like, they sold us a lot of other garbage.
I was an especially dumb kid. So, yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing. It doesn't really seem to know what it wants to be. And, yeah, it wants to be for kids like they think cartoons are for kids. But it also wants to be for adults in that it has all these terrible things like somebody's son dying and like and Tom Noonan with weird teeth. That ain't for kids.
It's just so weird that William Goldman was on this, Shane Black was on this, Carrie Fisher did like comedy on it. It just feels like
you can't polish a turd.
It was just too many big egos on a thing where they all tried to make it something different and pulled it in so many different directions.
And Schwarzenegger.
And Schwarzenegger.
The kids said like they spent like a week trying to figure out what car looked best. They spent like a week with Schwarzenegger testing out cars.
That's so stupid.
Yeah. Yeah, it does seem like a big, massive cash sink.
Yeah.
You know?
And also the kid. I mean, I actually thought the kid was pretty good in this movie. But, like, you know, why you can't get, like, a Macaulay Culkin or, you know, someone recognizable?
Well, this is the kid that replaced Macaulay Culkin in the My Girl series.
Right, yeah. And he's also the kid from Pre-Hysteria.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have to be honest. I didn't really love the kid in this movie.
No.
I found that he didn't really have the range to to sort of embody everything that this kid was trying to deal with, like, you know, the dead dad and the escaping into reality and not your hero. I don't know. He just couldn't do it.
Like, was Jonathan Taylor Thomas not available? I don't understand.
Well, the hair definitely seemed like they were sort of suggesting a Jonathan Taylor Thomas-esque, you know.
And I can just imagine audiences seeing this after Jurassic Park and being like, oh, the kid acting was way better in that other movie.
But the other thing is that, like, Arnold Schwarzenegger also doesn't have the range for this. Like, Arnold, he's the big action hero, but he's not an actor, really. He doesn't really do the acting with the feelings and the emotions.
I think he's very watchable in this.
Sure. I mean, he's watchable in a lot of things. But I think, like, if... It's so weird to have him be the guy that is parodying the sort of alpha action hero guy because that's just who he is.
I get what you're saying. Like, it's easy for him to play the action hero stuff, but I think the reason it might not have – the things that you pointed out, JM, that we liked a lot, like the, oh, my whole life is being written by someone and all that stuff, that didn't go anywhere because I don't know if Arnie could get there, honestly.
I think he could. I think he's a good actor. And I mean, especially lately, he's been killing it in dramas
lately,
like Maggie.
94 when this came out?
I think if the writing was there, it would have happened. But right. I think another problem is – it's Schwarzenegger playing a Schwarzenegger character, but that's not really – there is no kind of comparable franchise for Schwarzenegger. He does – you know, he did like the Terminator and Commando and Predator. Like none of the – like this is kind of like a Lethal Weapon thing. He was never in like a long-running cop.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, he was a kindergarten cop.
He was a kindergarten cop. Mm-hmm. He did like Red
Heat,
I guess.
Running cop.
But he's never been that like –
yeah, guy, like this the cop movie with like the chief who's yelling at him and like he mouths off and doesn't care. Yeah.
This felt more like McBain. This felt like some weird kind of abstract cultural sense of who we think Arnold Schwarzenegger is, down to like the cigar chomping, which is like in Predator, I guess, but more a thing we associate with his real life personality.
For sure.
It just was very unfocused.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Okay. So
also the cat.
That fucking cat. Okay, so let's go around and say, Blaine, did you think that this was a rewatchable film?
I mean, it's really interesting. At times, I don't think it's rewatchable. I think it's so interesting that it, like, the movie premiere in the movie echoed the future movie premiere in real life. That's really interesting to me. I think it's really interesting that they burned through a lot of cash and then they actually burned cash in this movie. Like, it just seemed like they knew what they had on their hands. And learning all this stuff about it, I kind of want to go back and rewatch it sometime in my life just to watch them do backflips and see what writer wrote what, like to parse it out in my mind. But it's not – I mean, if you like movies, don't watch this one. What about you, JM?
No.
Yeah, there you go. No.
I mean – again, I love the idea of it, but something else. Do something like never. It never felt like he had entered the world of an action movie, and that's what I wanted because I love so much of. Again, it's one of those movies that I don't think is great, and it's frustrating that it's not so great because it's such a good idea, and it has moments where it has glimmers of being a great movie, but it never commits to even parodying or reflecting the kind of thing that it's supposed to be. And I think a big problem is, like you said, they hired two guys that make those things. Like, I mean, they say, you know, Zach Penn says it in that article I was reading, like, you can't – they were expecting the studio to hire, you know, someone like a John Landis or, you know, who
right. –
he's got his own issues, but I mean, someone who could come in and sort of deconstruct the genre, not someone that's made some of the best examples of the genre, but someone who might not have the perspective to, yeah, I mean, like, even if as we talked about, like, the movie world didn't feel that different from the real world. So I'm disappointed that I didn't like it, but again, I didn't care for it.
Yeah, and I think that's what I was saying right at the beginning is that, like, as a kid, I had an imagination, and, like, watching this movie, I kind of remembered it being way better than it was because I think it's easy to imagine the movie that it could have been, and it just failed to be. That's what's so disappointing with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you, Rob?
Yeah, I feel the same way. I think I gave this room to be good, and it's sort of just a mess, and it's terrible. It's all over the place. There are so many bad aspects of it, but yeah, there are so many like really fascinating, interesting aspects of it that it's frustrating that it is so bad that they just decided to stop trying to, you know, elaborate on the themes that the original writers wrote in there and then just decided to make it like a sort of cheeky action or, you know, film pastiche. Mm-hmm. It's, yeah. That said, I feel like I could watch part of it if it came on TV, if that were still a thing. If I was channel surfing and I saw Little F. Murray Abraham, I would stop for sure. Because some of it is like for sure delightful. It's just like it's 2 hours and 10 minutes.
Yeah.
It's long.
Oh, yeah.
Like if you're parodying something, it should not be longer than the things that it is parodying.
Well, also, yeah, like when they come into the real world, that feels like it should be the beginning of the third act, right?
Yeah.
And it comes at right at the halfway point. It's right around, you know, just over an hour into the movie.
Yeah.
It's too long.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. Yeah, yeah.
But again, the like they were editing this thing right down to the wire. And yeah, it shows.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, not rewatchable. And that's the last action hero. That was all the action heroes.
All of them are dead now.
They're all gone.
This one killed them all.
Well, it was, though. It was kind of the end of that era, though.
Well, because of Clinton.
Because of Clinton. Yeah, exactly.
And that was the worst thing he ever did.
It's not. So that's rewatchability for this week. We'll be back next week with a mini episode. Mm-hmm. And then we'll be back with our regular episode the week after that. So new format starting next week. And until then, you can still find us on Apple Podcasts. We're still on Facebook and Twitter where you can communicate with us. And yeah, like give us your input about the movies that we watch, about what we say. If we miss something, if there's something that you really love about a movie that we don't mention, then chime in and we'll try to like work it in there somewhere, somehow.
Make it a pastiche again.
Make it a pastiche.
Like this movie.
Make it a pate.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.